prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
I'm adjusting my green screen on the fly here. I was starting to turn into a ghost. Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. Today is March 25th, 2021. We're going to be talking about intermittent fasting today. You know, we started talking about time-restricted feeding, intermittent fasting, or what I like to call a more ancestral feeding pattern for quite a long time on the show. And the reality is, it has become so much more than we ever thought it was going to be. I mean, obviously, increasing sirtuins and markers for better aging are fantastic. The balancing AMPK and mTOR, perhaps even quenching and removing some senescent cells from the body. These are exciting things, but they're things that you really don't see the benefits for years and years and years. But there's a lot of really exciting stuff happening on the intermittent fasting front where people are seeing very, very rapid changes in chronic disease states, which is making intermittent fasting even more popular today. But a lot of people still have a hard time getting their head around it. You know, how do you do it? What do you do? And so there are people out there like my guest today, Dr. Will Cole, who have really taken this information and made it palatable for most people, no pun intended, and usable, but he even takes it to a step further by using an approach where you can leverage certain foods depending on your disease state. It's very, very exciting. And I hope that many of you will pass this show around because there's a lot of friends that you have that don't tell you that they have certain thyroid disorders or autoimmune disorders. You know, people are embarrassed. It's still like the old days where if you had somebody in your family that was sick, you didn't want anybody to know because they would think you had demons in your family. But pass this show around because I think this show is going to help a lot of people. Before we get started, of course, we have to thank our title sponsor, and that is Legendary Foods. Legendary Foods, makers of the Tasty Pastry, the alternative to a Pop-Tart, 20 grams of high leucine, high protein, high quality protein, 5 net carbs, less than 1 gram of sugar. And you can check them out at shrnetwork.biz/legendary. Using the code SHR10, we'll save you 10% off this amazing, delightful pastry that you feel like you're cheating, but you're really not. And if you are too cheap to spring for a box, you can win a box. Every day we give away a couple free boxes on the show. Listen during the commercial breaks for the secret word. Email that secret word to onair@superhumanradio.net and you will enter to win. And people love them. Once you taste this, you may give up protein bars. I'm telling you right now, because not a lot of fiber. A lot of people are having problems with fiber, especially if you're a low FODMAP type person. Fiber may not be good for you. This doesn't have hardly any fiber at all in it, so it's fantastic. All right, and now without further delay, Dr. Will Cole, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, brother. How are you? I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Very good. Very good. So for people who don't know about you, you are probably one of the most sought-after functional medicine experts today. You service people around the globe from your home in Pittsburgh, thanks to webcam. And, you know, one of the things that came out of this pandemic is, you know, telemedicine really became popular overnight. But you help a lot of people have thyroid problems, autoimmune problems, and your approach is to find the insult. Let's find the insult first, which is counterintuitive compared to the pharmaceutical model today, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I started one of the first functional medicine telehealth centers, like you said, over a decade ago. So I've been doing telehealth my entire career for close to 12 years. So yeah, you're right. People had to learn overnight because of the pandemic. I wasn't planning on a pandemic because that's not why I started doing telehealth. It was just born out of necessity because there's so many people that you're referencing that have these underlying GI issues and inflammatory problems and metabolic issues that needed access to this stuff. And I was one of the earlier you know, people that were talking about functional medicine. It's so important. And there's, I'm so excited to talk with you today.
I want to just also give credit to Live On Labs for making this episode possible. Live On Labs has been a sponsor of this show for many, many, many years. Cindy Nachman and Les Nachman over there are friends. And I want to thank them so much for making this interview possible, because Dr. Cole is very, very sought after, and his time is very, very limited. So we will get to the bottom of very important information. I'm starting to suspect that the majority of chronic illnesses can be tracked back to autoimmunity. In fact, while rheumatoid arthritis has always been thought as an autoimmune disorder, only recently, in the past couple of years, do we realize that just plain old arthritis, osteoarthritis, is actually a slower version of rheumatoid arthritis and now tied back to autoimmunity. Do you think everything revolves around autoimmunity today in this population?
I think that more as time goes on and more studies are done and we understand the pathogenesis of chronic inflammatory health issues, we're going to find, I suspect, more autoimmune components to a lot of different health issues. So today, I think there's upwards of 100 different autoimmune diseases, and then a 40 additional health issues above that 100 that at least have an autoimmune component. But you're right. I mean, every year there's more and more autoimmune components that are discovered through things that we thought were just chronic inflammatory degenerative issues, that there's the immune system actually is losing recognition of self and attacking certain aspects of the body. So this is, yeah, it's something that's sadly growing by leaps and bounds.
Is this because of the rise in, you know, leaky gut has become a lightning rod, right? There's certain groups of physicians that if you say leaky gut, they say nonsense, it doesn't exist. But meanwhile, they treat GERD. Is that not leaky gut? I mean, if it's coming up your throat, it's still leaking, right? But then there's physicians who say, no, leaky gut is real. Does all this stem back to the fact that things that should stay in the digestive tract and be eliminated are getting into the bloodstream because of a malfunction in the digestive process?
That's definitely one component of it. Yeah. And so interesting for people to pontificate and say they don't believe, quote unquote, in intestinal permeability. This isn't a religion. There's hundreds and hundreds of studies on PubMed that are looking at intestinal permeability. Things are passing through the gut that shouldn't be able to pass through the gut. And it's triggering in some people this phenomenon, a seminal event called molecular mimicry. It's this case of mistaken identity when the immune system thinks that the thyroid or the joints or the brain is a virus and attacks it. So this is a component of it. I do see clinically other components to the triggering of autoimmunity other than gut issues, like chronic infections, trauma, that don't directly have to do with the gut. Indirectly, yes, because all of that stuff will further perpetuate gut problems. But the point is, it's a confluence of factors. The gut's just a major part of it. Why? Because it's 75 to 80% of the immune system's in the microbiome. So to understand inflammation, which is a product of the immune system, and the immune system, you want to look at where the predominance of the immune system resides, which is in the gastrointestinal system. So it's a piece of the puzzle for most people.
So let's talk about the book. Do we really need a book on teaching people how to fast? That's a rhetorical question, obviously, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we need another book on fasting, and that's kind of why I wanted to write the book in the way that I did. I mean, hence its title, Intuitive Fasting. It's a completely different part of the conversation that hasn't been made yet before, because there's a lot of great books about intermittent fasting and the science around it and the practical application of it. A lot of them were written by friends of mine. But I wanted to bring a more mindful approach to it, where you don't have to be a type A biohacker when those... Some of those people are my people too. I mean, they're my patients as well. You don't have to be that person, that aficionado health, wellness rock star to tap into these amazing things. I wanted to make it more accessible. I wanted there to be a context to why we're doing these things and have a conversation around you can have this sort of mindful, flexible approach to intermittent fasting. And the body's amazing ability, the healing capacity is profound if you allow it a chance to do so. So that's the conversation I'm having with intuitive fasting.
Okay, so what exactly does intuitive fasting mean? And how is that different than what other people are talking about when they talk about intermittent fasting?
So intuitive fasting, the reason why I titled that, there's a few different reasons. One, it's paradoxical on purpose because I really wanted to really make a point on the front end, just from a cover standpoint, of fasting will be anything but intuitive when someone's metabolically inflexible or metabolically rigid. They're stuck in sugar burning mode. They are hangry. They have insatiable cravings. Fasting will be anything but intuitive. And it's really a conversation coming from a functional medicine standpoint of metabolic flexibility and how we can, because there's this conversation about intuitive eating on social media, and it sounds nice, but for it to be more than just a vapid soundbite and a hashtag on Instagram, there has to be some semblance of metabolic flexibility. So I'm all for people eating mindfully and knowing their body and having agency over their health, but you actually have to show up for yourself first to create some metabolic flexibility, at least get it on its way, so you can calm inflammation levels, you can have proper blood sugar balance, you're more fat adapted. And at that point, fasting will be more mindful because you'll be in control of your food. You'll eat food because it's delicious and because it serves you. The food won't be in control of you. You won't be out of control with insatiable cravings. And you will be able to go longer without eating, not because it's some arduous, restrictive thing. It's just because you're more fat adapted. You can go longer without eating. So that's really the conversation about intuitive fasting. If fasting will be intuitive, just like eating will be more intuitive when you're metabolically flexible. I know what my body loves. I know what my body hates. And you have this sort of what I call in the book food peace. You have this deep peace knowing this is my true north when it comes to wellness. So many people are disillusioned about what they should even do because their body's so out of control. Is it hangriness or is it intuition? Is it insatiable cravings or intuition? There's so much noise that I want to calm down that proverbial noise and physiological noise. If you think about it, inflammation is noise in the body that blunts receptor sites and signaling in the body. So you don't even know what your body loves and hates. So I'm just calming that noise down, flexible intermittent fasting. And we're using it as a mindfulness practice too. It's not just fasting for the sake of it. I'm actually having people use mindfulness practices when they are fasting and when they're eating to learn about their body. So that's an important part of my clinical practice, and I wanted to share it with people.
So, you know, there's a nuance. I want to stay with this for a second. There's a lack of understanding about mindfulness. A lot of people think it's, touchy-feely, new age stuff, eat your food and be quiet and that's it. The reality is that there are numerous well-done studies that show, A, when people kind of relax a little bit before they endeavor their meal, get off their phone, don't read the back of the cereal box, but just like look at their food while they're eating it, that satiety increases. They seem to be able to control hunger for longer periods of time in between meals. But there's also a phenomenon that I read about years ago, and I can't remember who wrote about it. But if you sit down to a meal and you have a sense of angst for whatever reason, let's say you just had a fight with your spouse, you eat that meal, your body doesn't metabolize it the same way as if you were calm, because, the whole rest and digest phenomenon is legitimate. So think about people today who go, is this food good for me? Oh man, I don't know if I should be eating this. Like the food brings the angst with it. What happens then?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's this bidirectional relationship between our thoughts and emotions and our physiology. And you have to deal with both sides of the coin. So, if you're dealing with a toxic relationship or a stressful work environment, you're not getting enough sleep, you are endlessly scrolling on your phone with this FOMO-inducing content, your body's mentally, emotionally stressed out. That raises inflammation levels up. It's not going to make you feel good. It impacts your hormones and your gut health, all that stuff. But conversely, underlying gut issues or hormonal imbalances, chronic inflammation will impact your thoughts and emotions. So that's really that two sides of the same coin as the conversation that I'm having in intuitive fasting. You have to deal with your thoughts and emotions and flex that mindfulness muscle, if you will. But you also have to deal with the physiological thing. So I'm using fasting as a meditation, but also as a medicine. And I think both of those things need to be brought into place for us to have sustainable health. Otherwise, you get these people that are going in with such great intentions that I'm going to intermittent fast, I'm going to eat right, but they're not even dealing with their why. Like, why are they doing this? And then they end up going about it and rushing through it in a way that doesn't serve them long term, and they end up feeling like they're a failure because it's not sustainable for them. And they think, well, that's not for me. That fasting thing's not for me, or it's just too hard for me. But if you start to at least flex that mindfulness muscle, like you said, start to calm that inner chatter that goes on, you create a space for you to learn about what works for your body and what doesn't. And then there's this weird, awesome tipping point that happens for people where it's not this protocol anymore. It's this, no, I love feeling great more than I thought I missed something that made me feel really lousy. And I want people to have that paradigm shift. Because at that point, it's not restrictive at all. You just like feeling great more than you missed something that didn't make you feel great.
I regularly prolong eating because when I get into that moment in the fast, and it doesn't take long for me to do it because I've been doing it for so long, but I'm sure you know about it. It's kind of like a high. You feel good. Your brain is functioning well. Everything is clicking. You just feel so good. And you know that if you eat, it's going to kind of slow down. It's going to get sluggish. And I've put off eating and for the reason that it feels so good to be in that zone. Do you experience that? And do your patients, when they experience that, do they go, okay, I get it now. This is great.
Totally. Because at that point, it's a really lousy trade-off to do anything from that. So we're creating this awesome foundation, this sort of resilience and this center that they know they could pivot here and there from that center, but they really rarely do it because the feeling great is so much more than the trade-off. So absolutely, beta-hydroxybutyrate, we know it passes through the blood-brain barrier, improves BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's supporting neuroplasticity. It's supporting mitochondrial health. It's lowering neuroinflammation. So the cognitive improvements, the brain-supporting improvements are profound, but you have to put the work in. It's just like the analogy that I use in the book is this proverbial yoga class. If someone's metabolically inflexible, they're metabolically rigid, they're stuck in this sugar burning mode and they're hangry and they have cravings, that's like somebody with tight hamstrings and has never done yoga before. They're not going to be good at it at first. You have to keep showing up to that practice to become more flexible. And that's what intermittent fasting does. It expands and contracts the metabolism to become more flexible. And then just like people that are really good at yoga, it's an art. It's like a rhythm. It's a practice that just happens more intuitively. And that's how I see fasting.
Dr. Daniel Lieberman came on my show a couple times after writing the book, The Story of the Human Body. That book was really a pivotal point for me in my journey as well and the journey of the show. And one of the things he said was that culture drives evolution. And, you know, so I come back. My audience has heard me say this lots of times over the years, but I blame the movie Wall Street, Bud Fox and Gordon Gekko, for our belief that sleep was optional, right? Gordon's on the phone trading with Japan. Bud's going, hey, Bud, you're not going to make any money while you sleep. People went, oh, my God, I have to get rid of sleep if I want to be successful. The same could be said about the industrialization of America. Employers didn't want to pay for multiple meals throughout the day, so they had a lunch hour. You eat at home in the morning, you eat at home in the evening, and we're paying you for this one meal. And it structured eating to accommodate production, but it was foreign to us to eat that way because if you could, maybe you weren't hungry at 12, but you got to eat. This is your only chance. How does that play into people's resistance to understand the value of time-restricted feeding?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when I was writing the book, I didn't think it was going to be that radical. Maybe I'm because I'm just talking to my patients who get it and they feel better doing it. It's really not a radical thing. But having a book out the way that it is, and even just titling it Intuitive Fasting, it's triggering for a lot of people because the idea that fasting could be intuitive is just crazy to the modern thinker. Like, what the heck? We are bound by the next meal. We are bound by the next snack. And it's just the way that it is. And anything else is just seems as like disordered eating. I would say the way that we're living our life as modern America is just what's disordered. And the chronic health problems speak for themselves. We are not living in alignment with our biochemistry, like you speak so eloquently about. This ancestral mismatch, this evolutionary mismatch, the genetic epigenetic mismatch is at the heart of what researchers are exploring of what is the driver of most chronic inflammatory problems, autoimmune conditions being a component of it. But yeah, it's the constructs of how we live our life. It's just because something's common doesn't necessarily mean it's normal. Just because it's your everyday and the way that you've done it and your parents have done it doesn't necessarily mean you should settle for it.
Right. The people who could use time-restricted feeding or intuitive fasting the most are the metabolically deranged. And now we're talking about a large population of people who are either diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance or undiagnosed but have it, which is a really – I would venture to say half the population is insulin resistant today in America. And when we say heart disease is the number one killer, that's a lie because you get heart disease because you're insulin resistant. The reality is the number one reason for death today is insulin resistance, is mismanagement, dismanagement of sugar and metabolic disorder. Those people can use intermittent fasting to the greatest degree because it will help to restore insulin sensitivity. However, the challenge with them is because they're already metabolically inflexible, they have a hard time going. I know people that can't go 3 hours without a meal. They get the shakes. They start sweating. How do they embark on this journey, and how does the book help them?
Mm. You're absolutely right, and that is the statistic. It's 50%. Some studies show that, or more. It's over 50%. So more than one out of two of people have a massive blood sugar problem, or they're on this larger insulin-resistant inflammation spectrum, from mild weight loss resistance and fatigue and cravings to prediabetes, metabolic syndrome, PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome for women, and type 2 diabetes. That's all on the insulin-resistant spectrum. So it's a lot of people, and it is something that, you're right, this is an amazing tool that could benefit most people in the United States and around the world. But going in, just like that yoga analogy, you don't want to go to like an advanced yoga class when you're not very flexible and your hamstrings are tight. So it doesn't make yoga bad. It doesn't make yoga not for you if you have tight hamstrings. You just have to meet your body where it's at. And that's what I'm advocating people with intuitive fasting. It doesn't make the practice not good. You just don't want to rush into something when you're not ready for it. So start with, and that's why I started week one in the protocol in intuitive fasting, is just the simple, what I called in the book, body reset fast, which is not a very sexy fast for the fasting aficionados out there,
right?
The fasting community, because a 12-12 time-restricted feeding window is like, what the heck? The fasting pros would think like, really, that's not so cool. But the reality is, for most of the world, that's going to be a good firm foundation to build. It's just not eating too late at night. You have 12 hours to eat, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's just allowing them to allow a couple of hours to go in the evening after they stop eating dinner to allow their body to fast through the night until you break the fast at breakfast. And then repairing that with a ketotarian, a sort of a Mediterranean ketogenic diet that mimics the fasting and complements the fast. So even when they're not fasting, they're supporting metabolic flexibility.
Good studies have come out recently that show that a low-carbohydrate diet, however unpopular it may be in the American tapestry of diets today, actually can restore and reverse brain health to its original status. Dr. Dale Bredesen shows that, you know, low-carb, he addresses a lot of things, but amongst them on the table is low-carb, and you stop eating a minimum of 3 hours before going to sleep, so that autophagy and mitophagy can actually occur. When will people understand, and will they ever understand? Are we working against the tide because, modern food promotes carbohydrates as the end all and be all? I know people that when you look at their diet, they eat nothing but carbohydrates, and they're very unhealthy. When will people understand that low carbohydrate diet really is a better alternative to no matter what you're doing today?
I think it's going to – I don't know if it's ever going to happen in a system-wide conversation. But what I do see happening, and being in telehealth for the past decade and you being in this space for a long time talking to people, I think you're probably seeing the same thing that I've seen, is that more and more people are waking up and realizing what I'm doing isn't working for me, and I have to do something different to see something different. So it's not a system change, but it's a – individual micro change that's growing, that's changing some systems. So food industry is changing because they're innovating, because people are waking up to they want better options. So I think it's a really cool thing that's a grass level thing that's happening up, that people, because of conversations like this, whereas a couple of decades, not even that long ago, we weren't able to have long-form conversations like this in a massive way. And now there's a lot of the democratization of this information is really waking people up and realizing, wow, I do go through that and I don't want to settle for that. I want to do something different. So I think it's really cool. People, when they start feeling better and labs improve, and this is what I get to see on an hourly basis, there's very little room for pontification of like, oh, that's not right for you, right, or that's not good. It's right. Like, are you going to really argue with that person's C-reactive protein getting to normal and their biomarkers all improving? What I'm hearing from the conventional system, oftentimes their mainstream doctor, they're saying, hey, we don't get it, but whatever you're doing, keep on doing it. Because who can really argue with improved health and improved markers on a lab?
Really? No, I agree. So hormones. I know you specialize working with people who have compromised thyroids, hormones in general. Your protocols indicate that you can balance hormones by using time-restricted feeding, intuitive fasting. Is balancing hormones adequate enough if someone needs to have some restoration in hormone levels?
The hormonal balancing that I'm talking about, there's a few different things. I'm having with my patients, obviously, we're looking at labs in the context of the specific aspects of the protocols that we need to be integrating into their lives. But for the sake of intuitive fasting, the first hormonal imbalance that I'm discussing in the book is what we kind of discussed already, insulin resistance, and then just almost directly proportional to that for most people is leptin resistance. And the fact that we can modulate leptin in a positive way, lower insulin levels in a positive way and balance blood sugar, those are two hormonal imbalances driven by receptor site blunting and resistance patterns, we are improving. And when you improve leptin and improve insulin, it's going to create a cascade of positive improvements across the board. Because you start lowering inflammation levels, that's going to improve sensitivity, receptor site, proper hormonal signaling for a lot of different hormones. Thyroid hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, you're improving a lot of things throughout the body. But the other part of the conversation that I'm having in the book is direct conversations about progesterone and estrogen and thyroid hormone conversion too. So using food as nutrition, food as medicine, and with intermittent fasting, these are all tools within the toolbox. So the way that I'm advocating doing time-restricted feeding is a vacillating, flexible, sort of ebbing and flowing windows. Mm-hmm. You're not doing the same window all the time. Mm-hmm. And we're leveraging the benefits of clean carbohydrates, like whole food carbohydrates, like sweet potatoes and fruits and things like that, to actually, once you get some metabolic flexibility, you lower insulin, you lower leptin, you get more metabolically flexible. And then women do better with more of a cyclical approach when they're cycling right around the period, around ovulation, to actually leverage the benefits of supporting thyroid conversion and progesterone function. So I'm having a contextual conversation about these things versus saying, yeah, carbohydrates are like the best thing in the world, or more fasting is always better. It's the truth's oftentimes somewhere in the middle. And I think you can leverage the benefits of all these things in a way that works for you. And that's what I want people to explore for themselves.
Well, and the body is cyclical. You know, there's a phenomenon I've talked about on this show for a long time, and that is the phenomenon of abundance and scarcity. We know two things. Idiopathic short stature. If they give two groups of children the same exact growth hormone dose every week, but one they give them the same dose daily and the other one they give them erratic doses over 2 or 3 days, the group that gets the erratic dosing has a greater growth trajectory. The same thing is true of omega-3 fatty acids. If you take the same amount of fish oil day in and day out, the body goes, oh, abundance. Let's just start burning some of this as energy, as opposed to having a couple big bolus like large salmon dinners 3 times a week, and more of it gets stored for use to be used to quell inflammation and other things. So what you're talking about makes sense, because you got to kind of keep the body guessing a little bit. And if you can actually synchronize with women, they're better than us because they actually have something they can use to synchronize it with. So that's fascinating. I never really thought about that. We're going to take a quick commercial break. I want to tell people about the book. The book is called Intuitive Fasting. You can get it by going to shrnetwork.biz/fast, and FAST is all caps. Of course, you can get it at Barnes & Noble, Target, Amazon.com, and other places. And, of course, you can also go directly to Will's website, which is Dr. Will Cole, drwillcole.com. We're going to take one quick commercial break. Stay tuned. We're going to talk more about insulin, specifically on the other side of the break. You're listening to and watching Superhuman Radio. If you have questions, please post them on Facebook or YouTube. We'll be right back.
Do you remember those delicious toaster pastries you had when you were a kid? You know, the rectangular sugar-filled snacks? Well, guess what? Legendary Foods has just made low-carb toaster pastry. This is the first of its kind, and honestly, these things are amazing. They have 3 to 4 net carb, less than 1 gram of sugar, and 9 grams of protein. You can eat them right out of the wrapper or lightly toast them. The only question is, which flavor? Strawberry or brown sugar cinnamon? They're available at eatlegendary.com and Amazon.
Volume.
TaylorMade Health is focused on making sure you're able to perform and look your best. They are a leader in game-changing supplements and cosmetic products. Whether you want to increase strength, expedite recovery, facilitate soft tissue repair, or reduce deep wrinkles, TaylorMade Health has you covered. TaylorMade Health is also the home to Dr. Seed's products such as BPC, BPC Plus, and the Chill Pill. All of my listeners can now get 20% off their first order with code TRY20. That's TRY20. This code can even be used on subscription orders. Visit shrnetwork.biz/try20 today and use code TRY20 for 20% off your first order.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's REDCON, the number 1.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. We're talking about the book Intuitive Fasting with Dr. Will Cole. I really think that this book can save a lot of lives. I really do. I know the value. You know, like I said at the beginning of the show, when we first started talking about fasting, it was about sirtuins, it was about AMPK and mTOR, and it was about things that were out in the distant horizon. Oh, if you do this now and you keep doing it, you're going to see benefits there. But we see people who are doing time-restricted feeding talking about pain management happening in days. Oh, my knees don't hurt anymore. I'm fasted today. I kind of get on and get off right now, but I'm high right now. I'm not lying to you. I mean, I feel like I have a buzz because it's the ketones. I wake up in the morning after a 12-hour fast. I've got 1.2 millimoles because my body is so used to it. I'm so metabolically flexible. It goes, uh-oh, this idiot's doing it again. We better make some ketones. But It's amazing because now all of a sudden the focus is not what intermittent fasting is going to do for us out there when we're 30 years older, but what we're doing now. So that's kind of like gravy. Nobody even cares. Oh, I'm going to live longer and be healthier as I live. So here's my question I want to ask you right now. My biggest frustration for about the past 8 or 9 years, I've talked about on the show, is the reluctance of doctors to check blood sugar and insulin or even C-peptide at the same time. Because my argument is, how much insulin is that person making to keep their blood sugar in that range? How many people have come into you who have left traditional physicians and their doctor always told them, you're fine, your blood sugar is 80, but now you find out that their pancreas is pumping out gobs and gobs of insulin to keep it at 80. Does that happen often?
Happens all the time. So, I mean, this is – I have the unique position to see these labs on an hourly basis. And all of my patients, with a few exceptions, but most of them are extremely compliant patients in the conventional setting. So they've done everything their conventional doctors told them to do. They've really been great patients. And they honestly have, most of them have a great relationship with their conventional doctor, but they know something's not right here and something's not being addressed. So that then we're running labs, we're looking at the full data, not just the basic labs they're running on the basic labs that they're running from the doctor, running serum insulin or running C-peptide, or looking at the full, like even a nuclear magnetic resonance test to look at the subfractionation of these particles. These things are being missed all the time. And research actually shows this. By the time someone's diagnosed with a chronic disease, research estimates it's about 4 to 10 years prior to that diagnosis is when things were brewing on this inflammation spectrum. So it's such a reactionary thing. And then you get to the point where your A1C is too high and you have all these problems. Well, that didn't happen overnight. It happened actually 4 to 10 years prior to that. So wherever you're at on that inflammation spectrum, what can you do today to start moving the needle in a positive direction instead of waiting for time to somehow fix it? It's not going to fix it until you do something different.
Isn't A1C an artificial metric, if you will, because we assume that everyone on the planet, their red blood cells have a 90-day lifespan. Isn't it possible that metabolically deranged people, their red blood cells may turn over faster, maybe 45 days, and that 5.5 is actually a 10 if you let it go out to 90 days? Do you still trust A1C?
I think it's one piece of the puzzle. It's never what I hang my hat on is like, this is your number. And it's interesting how many people, they don't even get the A1Cs ran. It's like, those are missed oftentimes too, which you think, what the heck are they running? I mean, they barely run anything unless the person's really begging for it. And they're running just basic cholesterol markers, serum glucose, and that's it for most people. So you're right. You cannot just base it off of one A1C. You want to look at the full pattern. So we have to put it into context. So looking at HDL, is that in the optimal range? Is it 59 or above? We want to look at triglycerides. We want it under 100. Above 100 is one way for us to see the body's converting that blood sugar into circulating fat or triglycerides. Mm-hmm. That's like Paul Revere. That's like 4 to 10 years prior to that diabetes. It's saying diabetes is coming. Diabetes is coming. People have triglycerides 150, 200 and above, and there's no conversation about it until it's bad enough for them to give you a medication for it. So this reactionary approach fails a lot of people because these things take time to degenerate to the point when they can give you the medications. And I'm not just concerned with diagnosing a disease and matching it with the medication. I'm saying, what's going on with your health? How can we optimize it? So A1C by itself is not very helpful, but if you put it into context with everything else, it can tell a story.
Okay, so you just said something that's really intriguing to me, and it's something I've always believed and we talked about on the show. And that is, when someone goes in with high triglycerides, the first thing the doctor tells them to do is cut out red meat. But they miss the fact that the glyceride portion of this word is a sugar bound to a fat. Mm-hmm. And there's no discussion about cutting back on your carbs in the "we have to manage your triglycerides" approach. It's always fat, cut back on your cheese. Oh, no more cheese for you. No more red meat for you. And ultimately, the patient comes back and their triglycerides keep going higher because if you can't eat these things, I'll just eat more of these things.
Yeah, it happens all the time. I see it all the time. People that they go and become basically carbitarians after they're told that saturated fat is bad. And then the triglycerides go through the roof even higher. And they're like, what the heck? I'm doing like the plant-based thing, right? But it's actually counterproductive on the lab standpoint. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, it's easy to like make statements, but like if you're actually tracking the data and you see over and over again labs improve, you kind of know more or less the things that people have to do to get there.
We have a question from Robert Thompson on the A1C horizon. How does phlebotomy affect A1C? A lot of us in this audience, we do donate blood for the beneficial things it does for us, the people that are getting it. Does phlebotomy play a role in A1C readings?
I haven't seen a considerable change, and I have some people that do. I'm not I'm not a phlebotomist, obviously, but I do have some patients with hemochromatosis that have to do it. I haven't seen it make a major negative or positive change one way or the other. I'm sure it does something, but nothing that I know of specifically.
I would think it wouldn't affect anything, Robert, and the reason for that is because the red blood cells that are still being left behind are the ones that we're reading for we're looking for the glucose that's stuck to them, and so they're still there. So talk about renewal of cells. How does time-restricted feeding, intermittent fasting help renew cells? Because this is a big problem today. Once cell turnover stops happening, your skin gets crepey, your body starts falling apart, you don't recover from workouts as well, and so on and so forth.
I think that's one of the amazing aspects of intermittent fasting and time-restricted feeding, and paired with a clean whole foods-based ketogenic diet, I think, which mimics fasting in many ways. And if you look at the research of ketogenic diet and intermittent fasting, you're going to see a lot of the same mechanisms looked at because they're both supporting beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is known in the research as the fourth macronutrient. So we have protein, fats, carbs, and ketone bodies. And beta-hydroxybutyrate is not just a way to burn fat, which is a way to do that, but it is a signaling molecule or an epigenetic modulator, meaning it does really cool things for our health. One of them is it helps to lower inflammation, like we're talking about. It lowers things like NF-kappa B and the COX-2 pathway and the NLRP3 inflammasome, all these pro-inflammatory cytokines. So it's lowering inflammation. It's upregulating these pro-longevity pathways that you mentioned earlier, supporting autophagy pathways. So I think it's creating an environment where you're seeing all these amazing things happen and allowing healthy cell renewal, supporting autophagy pathways. And like I mentioned earlier, it's supporting the mitochondrial support and the improvement of BDNF. And it's, I think, eloquently said by Paracelsus. I quote him in the book, but he's known as the father of toxicology in medicine. And he lived in Switzerland in the late 1400s, early 1500s. He was known as the Martin Luther of medicine, too, because he was reforming medicine at the time. He called fasting the physician within, which I think is a beautiful way to say it. And now science is catching up with good old Paracelsus, that we have all the mechanisms and the pathways and the cool things that it's doing for our body. He didn't have the randomized controlled trial. He just saw people got better. People were healing whenever they were fasting. So all of this stuff is we can tap into that this physician within when we're experimenting with these tools.
And animals do it. I worked with horses as a young man. You know, a horse is off his feed. Uh-oh, take his temperature. Yep, he's sick. They know. They know, like, now is not the time to digest food. All my resources need to go to fixing me. So it's really phenomenal. What about I have so many questions, and I want to try to get to all of them before. With the chronic fatigue, I'm coming to the conclusion that chronic fatigue has more to do with insulin resistance than anything else. And I'm also starting to think that different tissue becomes insulin resistant at different periods. You know, I'm sorry, I have something in my eye. We have this illusion that we're this monolith of tissue. And so when I become insulin resistant, I become insulin resistant as a monolith. But that's not true, right? We know that there's a lot of people who are fairly lean, but they have distended guts. And when you do DEXA scans on them, you find that they have a ton of visceral fat. So that means that the visceral fat is responding very differently to the rest of the tissue to insulin sensitivity. The same is true of people who develop insulin resistance of the brain, type 3 diabetes. We know that they develop dementia and so on. So is chronic fatigue possibly one of the byproducts of insulin resistance that we should be addressing first, that instead of giving people garbage drugs?
Yeah, I think it's something that should be explored as a component of it without a doubt. And it's not looked at. It's definitely not looked at. And you only know what you're dealing with when you look at what the problem is instead of just, I mean, that's one of the diagnoses that I think is really kind of interesting, because labeling someone and giving someone a diagnosis code as chronic fatigue syndrome, anybody with CFS will tell you, yeah, I know I'm chronically fatigued, but why? It's like fibromyalgia. Well, I know I have pain. Why? These are just check engine lights. These are just, in functional medicine, they're just check engine lights. We know something's on, but what's underneath that proverbial hood that's driving that check engine light to be on in the first place? That we don't just want to cover up the check engine light and say, see you in 6 months and create this artificial environment. We want to actually know what's going on that's causing the problem in the first place. So that's what we can look at with labs. And I get to see all these different labs' perspective from their vantage point. What are the pieces to the puzzle for people with things like chronic fatigue syndrome and other different inflammatory problems? And insulin resistance is definitely a component for many people. But the interesting thing is, I think problems like chronic fatigue syndrome, just like things like fibromyalgia and many other chronic health problems, it's what's underneath the hood for one person isn't necessarily underneath the hood for the next person. And that's where you have to stay intellectually flexible and get out of the way as a clinician and say, well, let's figure it out. Whatever it is, let's figure it out. And without a doubt, insulin resistance is a component for many of everybody's, but not everybody's, interestingly enough.
Right.
So we want to keep an open mind. And what are the pieces to your puzzle? So looking at things like chronic infections, like chronic viral infections and mold and biotoxins and Lyme and co-infections to Lyme and heavy metal issues and trauma and these non-physiological things that impact the physiology and hormone imbalances and nutrient deficiencies. I mean, iron deficiencies being one of them, and insulin resistance and low thyroid hormones and leptin issues. All of these stuff, it typically is a confluence of factors, like a perfect storm. And my job is to say, what are the components to your perfect storm? What are the pieces to your puzzle? And it's going to be different from person to person.
I want to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about functional foods, because you talk about using foods to enhance the effects of time-restricted feeding. But before we do that, I want to tell people where they can get the – oh, wrong one. Well, that's good. Live On Labs brought us this interview. If you go to shrnetwork.biz/fast, and F-A-S-T is all caps, you can get your copy of Intuitive Fasting. You can also get it at Barnes & Noble, Target, IndieBound, and Amazon.com. And, of course, drwillcole.com, drwillcole.com. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. The power of light can be truly life-changing and an important element for every superhuman. Because of this, I want you to experience the power of award-winning Saluma light therapy. Saluma utilizes NASA research technology to improve health at the cellular level and is cleared by the FDA to effectively treat a variety of pain, muscle and joint conditions, as well as facial wrinkles and acne. Our entire team here at Superhuman Radio uses it. Its innovative shape-taking design allows for easy placement anywhere on the body. Choose from 13 different models. For an exclusive listener discount, go to shrnetwork.biz/Celuma. That's C-E-L-L-U-M-A. And use code SHR10 to save 10% off of one of these award-winning devices. As a listener of this show, you know how important your gut is to your overall health. Bioptimizers has a potent product to heal and repair your gut unlike anything else. It's called Leaky Gut Guardian. It's powered by patented IGY Max, an egg-based protein that enhances gut health, reverses antibiotic damage, and strengthens your immune system. Available in two delicious powders, vegetarian vanilla and chocolate carnivore. Simply mix it with your favorite beverage. Repair your gut and power up your immune system risk-free and save 10% off. Go to shrnetwork.biz/leaky gut. Don't delay. Fix your gut today. Getting a massage post-workout is a proven strategy to facilitate better recovery. Getting to massage therapists can be difficult and expensive, especially in these times. The solution is the Meteor, a heated massage ball from Myostorm. Reduce pain and soreness and expedite recovery with the Meteor's research-backed vibration settings and therapeutic heat. It's convenient for travel and works on any body part. Go to shrnetwork.biz/Meteor and use code SHR15 for 15% off and free shipping if you buy two or more. Start recovering better today. Folks, I'm pleased to announce that Pure Nootropics is now carrying the antioxidant alpha-lipoic acid in its bioidentical natural form as R-Ala. R-Ala provides protection in many areas and has even been shown to promote weight loss. Check out the interview I did on episode 2608 back in October to learn more. Our friends at Pure Nootropics have been bringing you great products and deals since 2013, and they have another one with R-Ala. Go to shrnetwork.biz/pure and use code SHR30 for a whopping 30% off. Level up. Go pure. Volume.
Are you ready to change the way you age? Of course you are. That's why you're here. Juvecel is a new, first-of-its-kind dietary supplement that includes 10 key research-backed ingredients shown in studies to support lifespan. Things like resveratrol, fisetin, quercetin, pterostilbene, sulforaphane, turmeric, all in a single dose. You may have some of these ingredients already, but Juvecel is the first to combine them all into a single product to support your lifespan. It's vegan, non-GMO, and sustainable. Live better, longer with Juvecel. Go to shrnetwork.biz/livebetter. Use code SHR and save 20% off today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Will Cole. His book, Intuitive Fasting, is a must have. I really love the idea of leveraging some of the natural things like timing and foods to get the most. This is like fasting 2.0, what you've done. You're like, well, okay, we've got this. We know how this works. This is great stuff. How can we improve upon it? So Let's talk about the foods. How do you use foods? Just give me an example of how do you use foods to accelerate the benefits of your fasting?
Yeah. So I think you're right. I think you said it in a way that I never fully thought about it. But I think that you bringing in flexible intermittent fasting, time compressed eating with food as nutrition specific for specific reasons with mindfulness practice, I think those three things really do enhance and take the fasting to the next level they all enhance themselves. They all take themselves to the next level. So food, as a functional medicine practitioner, I would not advocate someone to fast their way out of a poor diet. I think obviously in studies there had to have been done in the medical journals for us to see, does fasting stand on its own? So we know that there have been studies that have been done. If you don't change your calories, you don't change the foods that you eat much and just eat in specific windows, that does stand on its own and with studies, because it gives your body a break to repair and renew and allows those repair mechanisms to happen. But that's for researchers. That's for researchers to know, what's the mechanisms? Where does the science, is it come from the calorie restriction? Does it come from the food changes? Does it come from the calories? But that's for the journals. But for every day, how can I enhance my health? I would advocate you to eat foods that complement the fast and vice versa. So a lot of times people will just start with the fasting, or they'll do the fasting and they're not fully fat adapted because they're eating really lousy when they are eating. And you're going to get some of the benefits of the fast maybe, but it's not going to be sustainable, and it's not the full picture of what we're trying to talk about here when it comes to health. So if you really focus on foods in specific ways, the way that I'm advocating it for people in intuitive fasting is have this clean ketogenic diet that's cyclical. So you're using it therapeutically to lower inflammation levels, become more fat adapted, and it's fasting mimicking to have a more of a Mediterranean ketogenic diet. It's mimicking fasting. So even when you're not fasting, it's supporting metabolic flexibility and it's supporting ketosis and all these amazing benefits that I talked about earlier. And it allows your fasting to be more flexible too, because you're actually already supporting those pathways even when you're eating. So you don't have to be that obsessive about the fast. You can be quite measured and flexible about it to get all the amazing benefits. So, but the reason why I'm saying cyclical is because I still want people to have some flexibility there. And like we said earlier, many women specifically that are cycling do better with the cyclical ketogenic approach, where they're clean carb cycling around their periods. Some people do it around a heavy workout. And we're not doing like the traditional American like carb loading that's junk food. It's just increasing starchy tubers like sweet potatoes, increasing more fruits. It's very measured stuff. We're only going to about 75 to 150 grams of carbohydrates, which is still probably lower carb compared to most Americans.
Right.
But we're out of ketosis though. And that's okay. That's the kindling on the fire, the sugar, the good carbohydrates that we can use for its purposes. But we still have a log on the fire. We're still fat adapted. We still have that sustainable energy throughout the day. And I think the best energy, the best light throughout the day is having a log, fat for fuel and kindling or sugar for fuel. But you have to have the flexibility to burn both. And most people are stuck in this kindling burning mode, and they don't know there's a better way.
So, I've been exploring time-restricted feeding by having a morning meal. So the suprachiasmatic nuclei is pretty much set. Even shift workers, we don't see a lot of variation how it regulates. But body clocks and clocks in other tissue, it gets its cues from, you know, daylight and from feeding. And so I started to think maybe fasting throughout the morning and not having my first meal till sometime after my show was missing an opportunity. I started thinking maybe I should have my breakfast, a sensible meal. You know, I'm not going to – not Captain Crunch. But then I just stop eating earlier. So let's say my last meal for the day is 4:35 o'clock. So I'm still observing that long period of not eating, but I'm starting the day off. Have you experimented with this? Do you think there's any value to some people? You know, we know that there's lots of phenotypes where some people are night people, some people are, maybe they don't need the cues from food as well. But some of us need that meal to get the body going in the morning to say, oh, it's time to wake up.
Totally. I that's a conversation that I have in intuitive fasting, because we think in the fasting community that it's always about the don't eat when you first wake up and then break the fast. And like, it's not the cool fasting thing to do to have your breakfast and move your eating window earlier in the day. And then you just stop eating earlier in the day. I think that works for many people. I back to that intuitive fasting component. I don't think you need to follow these strict things that you hear someone else doing. Let it work with your day and how you feel. I want you to experiment and learn about your body and become more mindful about these things. Some people just like the art of breakfast. They just like that traditional breakfast, healthy food they're having in the morning. That's not a failure. You're just moving that eating window to suit you earlier in the day. And many people do that, and they're just ending their last meal a little bit earlier in the afternoon.
So I want to be careful how I phrase this question, because I'm a huge advocate of hormone replacement therapy once you're at an age where they're not coming back on their own. With that being said, over the years, I've discovered that women who choose not to get on HRT, and I respect that choice, it's their choice, who have hot flashes. Estrogen and progesterone have an effect on blood sugar management. And what I've discovered was women who are choosing not to get on HRT, but are tired of the hot flashes and, you know, and the GNC supplements aren't working for them, that if they start to focus on managing blood sugar, going to a more low carb, in the beginning it's hard, but if they do that, their hot flashes go away. Because if you look up hypoglycemia, the symptoms sound exactly like menopause. You know, hot flashes, anxiety, sleeplessness, sweat, sweating in the middle of the night, tremor. It's like, oh my God, that's hypoglycemia. And then you have these women say, no, that's what I'm experiencing going through menopause. What do you think about the role of fasting and the right kinds of foods in managing postmenopausal issues for women who don't want to get on HRT?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. I think perimenopausal, menopausal, and postmenopausal women, fasting is a great tool to consider because of its blood sugar balancing effect. Just like you said, it's getting insulin signaling working really well. And also, I would say, I think for many women, it's the lowering the inflammation levels. It's you create such a calmer system that you create this resilience where you're not having the highs and the lows, the volatility of hormonal changes, because you create this perfect storm again for many women where you have blood sugar problems, chronic inflammation, gut issues, and then the change of life during menopause. It's like the tipping point for some people, not everybody. You get some people, they're fine. They don't have these extreme symptoms. So at that point, we have to understand that estrogen and progesterone changes are correlated and maybe a piece of the puzzle, but not the entire puzzle. Otherwise, you'd have every woman experiencing these hot flashes and extreme symptoms. It's not for everybody. But yes, so that's why fasting can be really beneficial, because it's not going to directly, obviously, boost estrogen and progesterone during that time, but it's going to create more of a resilient state as far as gut health and blood sugar balancing and lowered inflammation levels, that it will abate a lot of these more extreme symptoms.
We have questions, but we can't get to them today. We will have to have Dr. Will back on the show again.
Yeah, happy to.
Yeah, because I know you have a hard break because you have patients you have to see. I want to promote the book one more time. The book is called Intuitive Fasting. I'm going to give it a read this weekend, shrnetwork.biz/fast, and Fast as Caps, F-A-S-T. Or you can go to Barnes & Noble, Target, IndieBound, Amazon.com, or to Dr. Will Cole, DrWillCole.com to learn more. Listen, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Take care. And we just want to remind everybody, tomorrow is Casual Friday. It's the last Friday of the month. That means the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo will be on the air with me. And we will discuss lots of interesting topics. Of course, Bill Gates will be in there somewhere, I assume. But I think we're also going to be talking about Elisa's regimen. A lot of the women in the audience always want to know, what does Elisa do for her skin and for her hair? And we're going to get into all that, plus any kind of nonsensical stuff we can find in the news to talk about. So that's tomorrow, Casual Friday. Thank you for being here today. Please share this show. Share all the shows. Just click the link on Facebook and share it to your wall. That's an easy way to get it done. All right, so that's it for today. We will see everybody tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Thank you for being here.